Hey there, everyone. I'm Danny Schechter, your News Dissector, here again this week with News Dissector Radio on Progressive Radio Network. PRN.FM are the call letters, the URL as well, to check out the show, to listen in, and also afterwards to download the show from your archive. So Progressive Radio Network has a lot of offerings, a lot of programming, and a lot to listen to, and a lot worth listening to, which is even more important. We're going to have a very interesting program for you today, talking about Wall Street, talking about the whole framework of the whole Occupy movement. We're also going to be meeting the tax dodgers, some activists who did some fantastic guerrilla theater about, you know, our tax system on tax day, and they'll be with us as well. So there's a lot to hear, there's a lot to listen to, there's a lot to participate in if you so choose. The number to call, 888-874-4888. The number again, 888-874-4888. The calls are free, of course. Cat Waters is here in the studio with me, driving along with me on this program every week and offering some great information. How are you today?
Pretty good. I just kind of, one quick thing, when I was transferring trains from like the N to the number one at 42nd Street and walking underground, they had, like SWAT teams with the helmets and these huge rifles, like in the subway station. I saw at least three of them, and if I had some time, I would have tried to stop and take a picture. It was a little.
So there's your subway report uniquely here on News Dissector Radio. You know, today is Freedom Day in South Africa. It's the anniversary of the elections that propelled Nelson Mandela from prison into the presidency in South Africa. It's an achievement for the world, but also an example, hopefully, to us that change is possible. If these folks could bring down a white racist regime, which was armed to the teeth, and do so with strategies and struggle that was successful in the end, that, you know, won free elections, won democracy in South Africa. That's a model for the rest of us. I was there back then, April 27th, 1994, covering the Mandela election. I did the film Countdown to Freedom. And it's an important kind of a point for the world to recognize, you know, that change can happen. Even today, when we look at the alignment of forces in our own country and the way in which, it seems as if change is impossible, more and more money in politics, more and more wars and all the rest of it. The South African case is an example. Of course, the outcome there is not perfect. There are problems of all kinds. But still, we have to pay our respect to the people who fought against apartheid, and not just in South Africa, but here in the United States as well. So we want to give them some props today on News Dissector Radio. Also, we want to point out that in the news today, finally, the former president of Liberia, Charles G. Taylor, has been convicted of war crimes at The Hague, the International Criminal Court. This is a man who oversaw the butchering of a tremendous number of people, the flight of 200,000 people from Liberia. Liberia, as you know, was partly settled by former American slaves. The capital, Monrovia, named after James Monroe, former American president. So the United States is very connected to Liberia, and the situation there, the war that erupted there, was shocking to the world. Finally, the wheels of justice, moving ever so slowly, are nevertheless moving, and we have the conviction of Charles Taylor, which is at least a signal, a sign, the first chief of state to be convicted of war crimes since Admiral Dönitz of the Nazi regime in World War II. So that's quite significant and important, and if you read the New York Times today, the front page, Helene Cooper, who's an editorial writer, an excellent writer for the New York Times, is also a Liberian. And she actually tells the story of the horror that swallowed Liberia. It's on page one of the Times, and talks about her own sister and what her family went through in this horrible, horrific human rights abuse. And so let's pay our respects also to the people of Liberia who didn't give up, who fought. Now Liberia has a female president, and it also has an incredible history and story to tell. And this is something that we want you know, to recognize and remember here as we go on. Also, we want to remind you that May 1st is coming. May 1st is a day without the 99%. It's a general strike. Do you want to read a little bit from the Occupied Wall Street Journal, Catherine, just to tell us what's going on?
Yeah, the 99% want a divorce. And, yeah, I mean, I have the newsletter also in my email, and starting at 8 a.m. in Bryan Park, there's going to be pop-up occupation with free food, art, speak outs, legal support will also be there. Will also be a hub for 99 Pickets, a series of protests targeting sites of corporate power throughout Midtown Manhattan. 2 p.m. OWS, that's Occupy Wall Street, will march to Union Square, joining a historic rally at 4 p.m. with allies in organized labor and immigrant rights movements.
So here we are on News Dissector Radio. You've joined us. You can join us on the phone at 888-874-488. Stay tuned. Stay with us because this program is going to get better by the moment. The tax dodgers are in the house, in the room. They're going to be sharing some of their passion and interesting information about, you know, what they did on tax day. And so we have all that going on. But coming up next is a gentleman I was on the phone with, an interview with KPFK in Los Angeles earlier this week, and I just, you know, was mesmerized by this guy, Christopher Holmes Smith. He's a clinical associate professor in the School of Communications at USC's Annenberg School in Communication and Journalism. But he's much more than a professor. This guy is hip. He's into hip-hop. He's into understanding not only the culture of media, but the culture of the financial world. And he's going to be joining us in a minute. But first, Christopher Smith, if you're listening, I want you to hear this. Occupy this.
In the entire planet that are more unequal than the United States in the distribution of our wealth.
This is corrupt!
Something's wrong in America!
Bankers, corporations throw the country into the gutter like dice. Whatever comes up, they win. Politicians are paid off to keep the game running. There's just no way you're going to be competitive in a rigged game.
This is corrupt!
Some of the best people we have will never get a shot.
Yeah, Christopher Holmes Smith, this is a movement moment, and something is happening in America. I don't know if you heard the song, if you could hear it there, but I want to welcome you to the program, and please introduce yourself a little bit more in terms of the work that you do, and then we'll get into a little conversation.
Well, thanks for having me, Danny. It's great to be here with you. I'm a clinical associate professor at the USC Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism, where I also have to have the pleasure of serving as the co-director of our new program in media, economics, and entrepreneurship that's designed to give students training in the technological, regulatory, and economic forces that are shaping and reshaping media industries. We also look at economic and business reporting, and it's very exciting.
You know, the financial crisis, of course, is still underway. The latest reports show, you know, growth is not happening right now. You know, this is a structural problem. It's not just a problem of one president or one administration, but of a whole financial system globally that's having a hard time, to say the least. And, you know, the way it's understood, the way it's reported, the way it's analyzed, the way people get to know about it is through our media. How is the media doing, you know, in communicating all this? What's your sense? You're watching it closely.
Well, I think the media is trying its best to keep up with two sets of phenomena. On the one hand, they're very fast-moving stories that more than ever have a greater degree of complexity because there's so much interconnection and correlation of events and phenomena because of globalization that makes it very difficult to people to keep a, you know, to keep a handle on. Things move very quickly. They're very interconnected. There are patterns of correlation that people don't yet understand. Then on the other hand, they're very slow moving events that are unfolding over time. Issues like population increase, aging population, health related issues. These things unfold over generations. Education is a social phenomenon that unfolds over generations. And so there's, on the one hand, very fast-moving events that are very difficult to track, that are very interconnected. It's hard for people to connect the dots. The media is challenged in that realm. And then on the slow-moving side of events, it's very hard for the media to sustain the level of engagement that will keep their readership and their audiences engaged over the period of time that's required to really deal with those problems. So I think the media has a twofold set of challenges. I think they're doing their best, given the fact that so many of these media organizations have depleted headcount and they're, you know, wrestling with fewer human resources than they've had in the past.
Chris, hi, this is Catherine. Can you hear me okay?
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, Chris, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, this is Catherine. I just wanted to ask you a quick question. Are you familiar with the James Madison quote that pretty much sums up exactly what you just spoke about?
No, I'm not.
James
you
Madison
had, I'd be happy to hear it.
I definitely am not going to attempt to, you know, to say it like in his words. I would have to kind of take the time to look it up. But like that's what he speaks about, the slow and the gradual as opposed to the sudden and the violent. You know, like that's how, you know, like things kind of, you know, people have their powers taken away from them more on a slow and gradual basis than the sudden and the violent. And it's just.
Let me dissent
like,
a little
thank
bit.
Thank you for saying that.
Chris, from your approach here, because, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with, first, how do you define the problem that we're dealing with? Is this a problem of a system which sort of gradually unraveled? There were mistakes made. There were investment bankers who thought housing would go up, but it went down, you know, and that everybody was doing it, therefore nobody's doing it, therefore nobody's responsible. Or is there more to this? Is there a level of underlying financial crime that triggered a number of these crises, not just greed on the individual level? Greed is kind of a sin, you know, but crime is a crime. And
No, absolutely. But I think, again, from my perspective, I think that they're connected, because I do think that the financial collapse that we experienced, that we're still dealing with, was something that developed over the course of a generation. You and I were talking about this a few days ago. This is a generation-old set of phenomena that coalesced in the, you know, perfect storm that led to the crisis of 07 and 08. You know, it took generations for new kinds of economic thinking and philosophy and policies to really gel. You had a political catalyst with Ronald Reagan. You had an economic theory catalyst with the University of Chicago School that through the 50s and 60s came up with new kinds of economic philosophies. You had, you know, Myron Scholes and other Nobel-winning laureates creating out of the Chicago School new kinds of valuation for fancy new products like derivatives. And it all kind of coalesced, you know, recently, but it took decades for all of that to kind of grow into a, you know, a coherent kind of structure. But within that, as that structure came together, yes, you definitely had people who were and continue to be very opportunistic when it comes to finding openings within that structure to take advantage of people, take advantage of laws, break existing laws, and profit because of it. So, you know, it's both happening at once. You've got some structural issues that take a long time to come together, but you always have very nimble-minded people who are looking for opportunity in the name of the capitalist system to take advantage of folks.
Well, you know, we call them predators myself, you know.
Yeah.
It's a predatory
capitalism.
Form of capitalism, and it's, you know, it's allowed to take place. It's unregulated. I think a statement was just made basically saying the lifting of Glass-Steagall, for example, kind of set the stage for a lot of this years ago. I believe that was Mr. Parsons, formerly with Time Warner, who made that statement. So, you know, sometimes things happen and we don't recognize the implications, the consequences of those decisions for years. And, you know, so we go along thinking that everything's going to move in the same direction as it always has, and then there's a massive break. Suddenly, millions of people are out of their homes. Millions of people are out of work. We have a crisis that's deepening in our society, and a lot of people didn't see the signs. You know, only 15 people in the articles that I've read of the 15,000 member American Economic Association even predicted the crash. Where were they? They were asleep at the switch.
People got very enamored with the theories behind financialization. And one of the great theories of financialization was that these new instruments, these derivative products, would be shock absorbers for a more globalized financial infrastructure. You had this new, completely globalized system of capital flow, and the derivatives were designed to be the linchpins of that system to absorb risk, to keep risk from overflowing and breaking through the equivalent of levies in the financial system. And the derivatives were really a lot of faith was placed in these derivatives to do what they were designed to do. And when you read the business press, whether it was the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, whatever, the economic philosophers who studied these products and wrote about them would always say, and Greenspan himself, when he was Fed chairman, would say, one day we'll see how well these instruments, which look so compelling in theory, will actually function in practice.
So what you're saying is,
when that moment arrived, those products failed, and the people at the at the wheel of those products failed miserably.
So what you're saying is they bought
in. Here we are.
They bought into the hype. They didn't listen.
They bought into the
hype.
They
didn't listen to Public Enemy. Said don't trust the hype.
And it's not just the hype. They bought into the beauty of something that appeared to be so elegantly designed.
Yeah, modernization, they called it, right?
Absolutely.
Chris,
they didn't really kick the tires. They waited until it was way too late
to do stress tests. They got seduced. Did you, Chris?
Absolutely.
Did you by any chance happen to catch Frontline on Tuesday evening at 9 o'clock? They had a 2-hour special, Money, Power, and Wall Street. It was really...
A good colleague of mine at the Annenberg School, John Taplin, just told me about that two-part series this morning. So I didn't see the first part.
Yeah, they basically...
I'll definitely catch it, though.
They basically interviewed, you know, I mean, back then, the, you know, 20-some-odd-year-old, you know, few, you know, maybe like there was like four of them that actually were the ones that came up with these, you know, derivatives and this idea, you know, and like, again, why, like, they're not being held accountable or at least, somewhat responsible, you know. I mean, the second part is on this coming Tuesday, but you can also watch it on the web.
On PBS.
Well, I mean, this is where I think Danny's exactly right. It's called willful blindness. They looked away because there was the incentive. While these products were being put in place globally and turning into this massive industry, trillions of dollars in derivative products worldwide, the incentive structure became skewed.
It's like a financial orgy.
It became much more valuable to look away from the possible problem because these products were the margin, the profit margin for these products was too huge.
It may be
It
may be that our system is too incapacitated, too deregulated, too underfunded to really pursue all this. The Times today is reporting that federal prosecutors in California are said to be investigating whether an investment banker at Goldman Sachs leaked confidential information about healthcare deals to the Galeon Group, which is that hedge fund whose chief was sent to prison. So it's an incestuous world. It's an interlocking world. It's an interconnected world that many of us don't really understand too clearly. And I think that your analysis of it is very, very important. And, you know, we seem to be on the margins here talking about talking another language, talking about things that most Americans don't relate to and don't understand that it's those things that are responsible in part for the situation they're in today. That the, you know, when Humpty Dumpty falls off the wall, somebody pushed him in this case.
No, absolutely. And I think you raised an excellent point, Danny, that I think is fundamental to this, and that is that increasingly economic commentators are warning the United States that for generations, the version of capitalism we practice here has been viewed by the rest of the world as the model to follow. Even give or take different social experiments elsewhere that were, you know, grand experiments in China and, you know, Cuba elsewhere. The United States was looked at, you know, we had a lot of goodwill in the world because our version of capitalism appeared to reward industrious individuals who operated under the rule of law. What's going on in the wake of the crisis is we've destroyed a lot of that goodwill that put us in such good standing around the world. And now we're rapidly becoming, in terms of your point about interconnectedness of these people, we're looking like just another crony capitalist run banana republic where a chosen few get to operate in utter impunity and the rest of us suffer.
Now,
if we go that route, we will lose the true goose that laid the golden eggs, and that's a whole philosophy of how the system should function.
Chris, I found my James Madison quote, and it reads, "I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachments by those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations."
There you go.
Now,
thank you,
Jim. Quote.
It's like my favorite quote in the whole
Thank you, Jim. thank you, James, for that. We appreciate that. You know, what I'm trying to get at, though, is, you know, you are also somebody who's a cultural studies guy, a community person. You know, we were talking the other day about hip hop and the failure of hip hop to really speak out against these issues, you know, being co-opted, going for the gold, going for the Benjamins, whatever it is, you know, and getting cut off from their community base, not being a voice for change. I mean, you know, Public Enemy talked about CNN, rather hip-hop as the black CNN. But, you know, in many ways, you know, it may be, you know, the black CNBC, you know, in terms of, you know, in terms of identifying with power, wanting power. At the same time, we have the highest rate of incarceration in the world, in the United States, and largely people of black, Latino, people of color, in jail, on long sentences, being oppressed, you know, in this country. And what it seems to me is important is that their voices are not out there warning us about these financial crises. And this must be of concern to you, too.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that the last time you had a real sort of moment of opportunity where a lot of hip-hop artists were kind of pushing back against the grain of financial capitalism was in the mid to late 90s. You did have a lot of artists out there, independent and on major labels, who talked about mass incarceration, talked about the way crony capitalism looked from their vantage point. Crony capitalism was very much a theme in a lot of hip hop at that time. It was, you know, couched within a lot of conspiracy theory. But that conspiracy theory is what arises when people are locked out from explanations for how so much value is created for so few. It's no surprise that people turn to conspiracy theory to explain what's going on. So a lot of hip-hop artists had turned to conspiracy theory to kind of explain what was, you know, to try to connect the dots and to connect how does mass incarceration articulate with, you know, these new global wealth systems. And a lot of these rappers were New York-based, because the New York-based rappers, obviously, they don't know the intricacies of how Wall Street operates, but they're in close proximity to Wall Street. Many of them know people who work as messengers in the financial district and work in service-related industries connected with Wall Street. So they kind of know how powerful Wall Street is as a talisman of meaning for people in New York City.
Yeah, stay with us, Chris, because we're going to play a little hip-hop song that is from my film In Debt We Trust called Predator. Actually, it was made in L.A., but it's about this issue. Catherine has some information here.
Really quickly, in the last issue of the Occupy Wall Street Journal, this one paragraph that reads, the GEO Group recorded $1.6 billion in total revenue last year, and one of its biggest investors is Wells Fargo, which also serves as its broker trustee.
The GEO Group builds prisons, right?
Right. Too few D.C. residents knows that Wells Fargo supports the imprisonment of our families, friends, and neighbors. And, it just goes on to read, you know, the extreme profits that go on by putting people in prison.
Well, there you go. And this is a related issue and an important issue. Chris, I don't know how busy you are. If you can hang a little bit with us, we have some people called the Tax Dodgers who are going to be performing for us and talking a little bit about their kind of guerrilla theater actions on tax day against the IRS. They'll be joining us in a few minutes, but we were going to go out to the break now with this song, Predator. Check it out, please.
In debt, tell them we, here we go, trust.
If you can't maintain a certain amount, no bank is gonna let you have a checking account. So when you gotta cash a check, cause your kids need to eat, there's a check cashing place about a block up your street. When the money's tight, you don't have to wait. There's a 500% interest rate that you keep rolling over on that payday loan. And if you can't afford the freezer, you can rent to own. You gotta make those payments, bro, you can't miss one. You can buy it three times over by the time that you're done. If you do miss a payment, they will repossess. And when your ice cream melts, it's gonna make a mess. Cause they're predators, predators. They keep devouring more and more. They're predators, predators. They're getting richer by praying on the poor. If your credit is good, you know you still can't win, cause your bank might judge you by the color of skin. You're a credit risk in their point of view. They got a subprime rate that's just for you. You get the higher interest and the larger fees, and don't forget the prepayment penalties are an adjustable rate that's low for a time. But when you turn your back, that rate starts to climb. If your cheese is gone and your well runs dry, you can refinance your home in the blink of an eye. But if you fall behind and you just can't pay, the bank is gonna take your home away, cause they're predators, predators.
Y'all know me as Crisis, they know me as Sergeant Adams, 25th Infantry Division, 185 MI Coast Station out of Hawaii in Schofield Barracks. 9 years, 4 years active duty Army 19 Delta Frontline Reconnaissance Cavalry Scout. 2 years off spent in New York. Joined the Air Force Reserve in the year 2000 under admin. Though I'm going in cover. Wanted to go back to the Army conditional release to reclass into the military intelligence family of the Army. Went to Georgia, re-upped. Went to Fort Huachuca, Arizona. Military Intelligence School assigned to the 25th Infantry Division in Hawaii, deployed to Kuwait December 8th of 2007,
so we giving up these rides in the zone.
Hey, that's a track called We Are the Soldiers from Goldie, CD, We Are at War. War, it's called, and he's one of the activists of Occupy Wall Street. He's been on the program. Hopefully we'll have him on again, talk about what happened, you know, on May Day next week. But right now I wanted to get a little taste of his music. It's quite dramatic and quite interesting. In this segment of the program, we are being joined by the tax dodgers, who are the people who are actually in the studio in uniform, wearing their hats, wearing their baseball outfits, to actually talk about what was going on with the whole tax dodging effort. Chris Holm Smith is still with us. Catherine, would you introduce this video of what you shot, you know, on the day of April 15th, the tax day?
Well, it was actually Tuesday the 17th, because the 15th was on the Sunday.
Correct me. Forgive me. Oh, my God. Okay.
And, you know, I just kind of, you know, I started out in front of the IRS, but eventually it was over by the large post office that I met. I mean, obviously, there was more of you. There's about seven or eight. Introduce yourself. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're the tax dodgers, the best team that corporate money could buy, and we have all the best players in corporate America on our team. You know, from Verizon, Bank of America, GE, Wells Fargo, Time Warner, Citibank, ExxonMobil, Boeing, Pfizer, IBM. We got them all.
And okay, so give us a little bit of the statistics.
Well, let's talk about our MVP, our most valuable player, our heavy hitter, General Electric. You know, our team, we bat over 1,000, right? We don't just pay no taxes. We actually get to pay negative taxes. GE made over $4 billion in U.S. profits in 2010. And even though it paid no taxes, still got over $3 billion in tax refunds and rebates. That's a negative tax rate of negative 76%.
And we've done this with multiple teams. Verizon made $35 billion between 2008 and 2010 and got a $1 billion tax rebate, didn't pay a dime in taxes. Same is true for Wells Fargo. Same is true for Con Edison.
Do you know any? Do you have any stats on Exxon? Because I read in one of the articles here that Exxon is like the 1% of the 1%. I mean, like they made four times the money that Apple computers made in 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, we are an elite team. You know, we're the best of the best. So, you know, anyone who's on our team is, again, not paying any taxes and getting money back.
So let's hear this video, some of the action that Catherine videotaped on the 17th. Forgive me, I suggested it was the 15th. I was so wrong. I will go into the corner and just stand there for a while after the program. But right now, let's go to YouTube and hear it. Really cool. The tax dodgers in action on the 17th, official tax day, and in studio right now with us, joining us, Chris Smith at USC in LA, listening in. What do you think, Chris? You ready to go to this
game? I thought that was great. I mean, it really spells it out for people in a way they can understand.
So what we have here, you know, is an effort to use culture, to use music, to use guerrilla theater, to use their presence to engage, you know, with people who are concerned about this. There's a whole tradition of that, isn't there, Chris?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a long tradition of people, the situation. It's people who take to the streets to make manifest what everyone has in the back of their mind, but put it on display in a very theatrical and a very compelling way to force people to engage with what's already on their mind anyway.
And these guys had bats and balls with them. Tell us what kind of reaction you had out in the streets.
Well, we were really out there to thank Americans on Tax Day because, you know, we really couldn't have had another record-breaking season without them. And we just wanted to remind Americans that, you know, that they pay taxes so that we don't have to.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are always kind of surprised to see how successful we are. You know, there was a time in this country where wealthy people actually paid taxes. For example, under Eisenhower, who was a socialist that was somehow labeled a Republican, the top marginal tax rate was 90%. So that means if you made $1 million in income in 1 year, you paid $900,000 to the government in taxes. But since the Reagan era, we've figured out numerous ways to manipulate the tax code, shove loopholes into laws, and exploit offshore tax havens in order to pay low or even negative tax rates.
And some people today still do, you know, think that the rich do pay taxes or that they do pay like their, you know, fair share.
Well, because, you know, any wealthy person can get on the radio, get on TV and say, I pay what I'm supposed to pay under law. And very few people understand that that means they're not paying anything.
Right.
You know, Romney always says, I paid what I was supposed to pay.
Right. But this is part of the great inequality in America.
Yeah.
I just want to inform anyone listening. If you're interested, I have a piece up on Al Jazeera called The Inequality That Ate America, which is about how extremely intense all of this really is, that this is a growing gap between, you know, the super rich and the rest of us. Money is moving upwards, you know, in the hierarchy, the people who need it least from the people who need it most. This is a structural crisis, the likes of which we haven't really seen before, and which really will make it very hard to maintain a democracy in this country. I'm working on a series called Who Rules America, and I was down in Congress yesterday speaking with a congressman, speaking with former committee chairman, and a member of the staff there who basically, you know, told me, forget about it. Money is dominating Congress. And most of the congressmen spend most of their time out raising money. They come in the morning. They're bleary-eyed from partying the night before. The 20-year-old interns are running their offices and deciding how they should vote or not vote or writing their speeches. You know, that we're in a situation where we have the image, the perception of democracy, but increasingly the reality is anything but that. And this is very disturbing. I would urge you to check out the website opensecrets.org. Opensecrets.org catalogs and categorizes who's paying off the members of Congress. And, you know, it's quite a story. They list it all. They've done a tremendous amount of research. The website is very, very dynamic and very informative. And I met the executive director there. They were talking about it. I met the head of Public Citizen, an organization that's been going for 40 years, originally founded by Ralph Nader, who isn't working with them anymore because he was running for office and the like. And they were telling me about this recent scandal in Congress where members of Congress were engaging in insider trading on information that came out in their own hearings. And they were selling off that information, the political intelligence companies, and they were profiting. They were allowed by law to actually trade on the information that they were receiving as members of Congress. And now there's been a Stock Act, quote, reform that's been passed to stop this practice. But it's been pervasive in the Congress involving Democrats and Republicans who have been making money off of insider knowledge that they get as members of Congress representing us, you and I. So, you know, this is a situation where the tax, the unfairness of the tax code, in a way, is a metaphor, is an extension of the unfairness of the whole system. And that's what a lot of these people were telling me. You know, this is not something that you can easily legislate against because the institutions themselves are so corrupted and so collusive with these private interests, and they depend on them. They rely on them. We've all heard about this ALEC organization that writes the, you know, various pieces of legislation or supported this Stand Your Ground legislation, you know, that in a sense created the basis of the, you know, of the quote law under which Trayvon Martin was killed by a security guard, you know, down in Florida. So we're looking at really deep problems, but to communicate about those problems, to explain them to people, is the challenge that we have. And you guys are on the front lines of this, it seems to me.
Yeah, you know, I don't know about all that. It sounds like something out of left field, but you know, we don't pay taxes, right? We pay lobbyists instead. That's where we invest our money, and we don't need to play fair because we rigged the game. You know, we own the refs, we own the court systems, we own the politicians. We've got all the bases covered.
Yeah, I like how you bring up the thing about insider trading in Congress. I mean, most members of Congress play on our team. They're members of the 1%. We help them figure out ways to evade taxes, and they help us put in laws that help big corporations and other wealthy
individuals Chris,
evade taxes.
You know, you're a student of media. You're an analyst. You've been in the media a lot. What could be done? What could we suggest be done to try to popularize these issues even more?
Well, I think that, you know, what the guys are doing, what the tax dodgers are doing is a great method to replicate, and that is to use a certain amount of ironic humor and a certain ironic approach to get across, particularly to the millennial generation, what's at stake for them as they look, you know, toward their future with a lot of uncertainty. There have been a lot of studies recently, one that was, you know, ironically put forward by the Comedy Central cable network that indicated that the millennial generation couches a lot of what's important to them in irony and humor. And so I think using that kind of approach to convey really, really important information that if put in a different framework, they might not receive or be, you know, would look upon as relevant, I think is important. So speaking in a language that I think the demographic that has the most at stake in all this is really strategic and important to follow up on.
You know, AP reported this week that one out of two college students, you know, can't find jobs. That is, you know, that is dramatic. The whole idea of going to college, incurring all this debt, you know, satisfying your parents, suffering through 4 years of, you know, drinking beer and tests and all the rest of it, and going to schools like USC, et cetera, and so forth. And now you get out, you can't find work. What happens to those kids? What's going to happen to this whole generation, Chris, or Dodgers? It's really frightening. You see a lot of young people in Occupy involved in all this, not because they're fighting for someone else, because they're fighting for their own futures.
Well, I think that what's happening, and I think the tax dodgers, at least not the gentlemen themselves, but the characters that they play, need to be worried, because I think that what's happening is that gradually a new mindset about what the American dream is really all about is starting to dawn and awaken in the minds of the millennial generation and perhaps even in the generation that's coming beneath them, that they're starting to think that just grabbing more goodies is not really what capitalism is all about, not really what the American way is all about. And we're starting to see the leading indicators that suggest that a lot of the best and brightest are starting to look for other options than working for some of these big corporations like a Verizon, you know, like a GE, and certainly for the big banks on Wall Street. That a lot of, for the last generation, Wall Street in particular has been able to claim the mind share of great universities like USC who churn out year on year great, talented, eager young minds, many of them have gone to Wall Street, gone to the big consultancies and, you know, work for them. And I think that we're seeing the leading indicators that the best and brightest are starting to look for alternatives. So the characters that the tax dodgers play, I think, need to worry a little bit about that.
What is starting to happen, like what I see, you know, in talking about all this college debt, is like the corporations and, you know, the money, the so-called money, you know, it's almost like this huge, you know, like net in the ocean. And, you know, it's like it's catching up like all, you know, like all of the fish, you know, and everyone's getting like caught in it, whether they even realize it or not. You know, like, it's a trap. You know, you think you go into school, you think you're like getting free, and it just ends up being like this net that you get caught
in.
Well, what's
happening, and real quickly, I'll just say, you know, one thing that's happening. The education is a huge aspect of this. And what's happening is there's a enormous middle class that's growing worldwide. And we've got more international students coming to American universities than ever before. And unlike in the past, they're incentivized to go back to their countries of origin. I mean, and there's so many opportunities in emerging and frontier markets worldwide that you're seeing enormous growth going on. And you know, in a lot of respects, it's a great thing because it could lead to more peace in the world if more people become prosperous, more inclined to you know.
But, Chris, it could also lead to more inequality in the world, can't
exactly.
In other words,
no,
where the elites.
It's a paradox. It's a paradox. Will the challenge for governing bodies like the IMF, the World Bank, the United Nations, whatever, is to make sure that the growing prosperity that's a welcome trend worldwide doesn't replicate the two-tier society that we have in this country. That's the challenge. And we have to really get ahead of that, as quickly as possible, or we could see something that we want, more prosperity, end up being, you know, a bad thing.
Well, we know these tax dodgers are, you know, playing a big game of life here. You know, those of us in New York have seen how, you know, City Bank took over the Mets field and had it named for themselves, how the Yankees got all kinds of subsidies to put in more big boxes for richer fans. And, you know, basically the cost of going to a game is now sort of sky high. Guys, last comments.
Yeah, well, you know, we're the tax dodgers. We're number one, and by that we mean we're the 1%.
Where does it end?
You know, we've heard a lot on this program about how, you know, maybe if we paid taxes, we'd be giving people opportunities to go further in the world. I think that our system is fine as it is. I think if we continue to use the government to continue to make us wealthier, we'll give to charity and give people opportunities like that. And I think, you know, as the 1%.
You mean crumbs.
Well, people can live off crumbs.
Well, there you go. The case for crumbs, the case for education, the case for change, the case for consciousness. It's all here every week on News Dissector Radio. We're trying to find people who can speak to all this. Chris Smith, thank you so much for joining us from sunny California. Catherine Waters, who's covering Occupy and who's been reporting on what's happening in Occupy every week, you know, it has been a great asset to the program. The Tax Dodgers, thank you guys for coming here. If you want to hear this program or to share it with others, you can go to the PRN.FM website. The podcasts are available to download and tell people about the program. You can reach me at dissector@mediachannel.org. My current blog at newsdissector.net has a expose on drones and the whole way in which there are now drones on 63 air bases in the United States. And the wars that we've seen in Pakistan using drone warfare may be coming home to the United States. So this is a story that I wrote about today. You can check it out at newsdissector.net. My latest film is Plunder, the Crime of Our Time, plunderthecrimeofourtime.com. We're trying to communicate about this crisis. We're trying to, you know, support the people who are fighting back, who are trying to make a difference every week here on this program and here at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. So thank you for being here. We'll see you again next week.
To chase and to Wachovia, Wells Fargo, Sally Mae, to MasterCard and Citibank, and also B of A. American Express and Visa, Morgan Stanley too. In debt we trust, so pay we must. We